Hi, I'm Matt Shepard.
And I'm Chad Shepard.
Shep, Shower, and Shave, proudly brought to you in part by Fifth Avenue. And, of course, Northwestern Tech. Coming up on this edition of Shep, Shower, and Shave, is it too early to slap the seller's tag on the Tigers?
Who will Las Vegas poach from the Red Wings roster? And did Ken Holland protect the right players?
That's coming up on Shep, Shower, and Shave. Fifth Avenue. They've always been a premier destination in Royal Oak with over 36 cold beers on tap, great food, drink specials, a kitchen that is open till 2 a.m. daily, and an amazing outdoor patio bar, plus pool, billiards, and a staff devoted to making your experience at Fifth Avenue a memorable one. All right, the Tigers need some more support. There's no question about it. In their starting rotation, Anibal Sanchez came back the other night in Seattle. Had he not gotten hit on the calf, he might have gone longer or would have gone longer than five innings. How encouraged were you with his outing? Because maybe I have a low bar, and that's possible with him. I have too high a bar for Justin Verlander and Michael Fulmer and probably too low of a bar for Anibal Sanchez. I was actually encouraged with what he did the other day in Seattle.
I thought he located the ball pretty well. He got up to about 93 with his fastball, which we'd seen hover closer to the low 90s in his previous
action. Does that matter to you?
Yeah, it does. Because
why?
Well, first of all, this time of the year, everyone's arm is a little warmer, a little looser, and you can get to that spot earlier in games, I think. I mean, starting pitching in today's MLB is such an artwork, such an art form that a lot of these guys come out and they're already limber and stretched, and they can hit 96, 97 out of the gun. So to see Sanchez go in the early innings and touch 93 was good. It just means that his arm is feeling good. I don't think there's tightness or soreness there, nor should there be. Another encouraging thing to me was that his off-speed stuff was that he was able to locate it down in the zone. Mm-hmm. He was able to start it at your knees and finish it around your ankles, whereas before he was leaving a lot of stuff up by the letters that finished around the belt. He was getting off-speed pitches absolutely crushed, and he did give one up yesterday. But he was also able to escape out of a couple jams, and I think that's important to see him put a couple runners on, even though you'd rather not see the two walks and one hits batsman in the top of the second, but to see him get in that situation and then maneuver out of it without needing to be bailed out by his bullpen early in the game, I know, but I think it was an encouraging sign.
I thought five strikeouts were big. I really do.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is a guy who has not necessarily been a strikeout pitcher. He's a guy who this season has had trouble putting guys away in a relief role more than anything else, but he seemed to have done that. The big concern, of course, is the home run. And he, and we'll get to Francisco Rodriguez coming up too, he's given up way too many. And we've talked about this before. Really, Detroit pitchers in general have given up way too many. And that should be a pressing concern, and I know it is, for Brad Ausmus. It's a serious problem that this team has. They can't seem to be able to get through without making that major faux pas. And look, there's more home runs hit these days than there ever has been collectively in baseball. But still, here's a guy who's appeared in 12 games. All right, he's thrown 26 innings, and he's given up 10 home runs. And that should be something that of a red flag and then some with this pitching staff. It's not just Anibal Sanchez, all right, but it's this pitching staff in general. And then Francisco Rodriguez comes in, and there's going to be a time where this team just says enough is enough, because I don't care what anybody says. I mean, he went two-thirds of an inning Monday night in Seattle, and he gave up two hits, and he gave up another home run. Alex Wilson gave up a home run. Alex Wilson, who I like a lot and I think could bring some trade value, drops to 1-4. His whip is over 2 right now in the month of June. He's made like 7 appearances, and he's given up 6 earned runs or vice versa. It's a serious problem with what's going on with some of the arms in that bullpen right now.
I know. You almost want to not use Alex Wilson.
I know.
Please retain some of your trade value. Don't blow your ERA up in the next 4 weeks for some meaningless pursuit, because I think, I don't know, Cleveland's caught fire a little bit. I think they're 7-3 of their last 10. You said they won 6 in a row. They're starting to look a little bit more like the team that made a deep run last year. And now could be the time, these next 2 or 3 weeks could be the time where we see Detroit, that gap begins to widen a little bit in the division.
Well, I think it will, and I think this road trip is of the most importance, because going into the road trip, Detroit was 5 games under 500. all right, or four games under 500, excuse me, going into the road trip. Four games under 500, and they were 4.5 back of Cleveland. And as you mentioned, Cleveland was on a roll. They won their sixth in a row Monday night by blowing out Baltimore. So Detroit was four games under 500. Then they lose, and Cleveland wins. Now that suddenly they're five games under 500 and 5.5 back in the division. And I don't know how many games back in each division a fan base feels like a team can be before they decide to pull the trigger on any type of moves.
And to your point, it's not just how many games back are you, it's how many teams you have to pass to get to that
right.
spot.
Well, you're not getting a wild card spot. Everybody knows that, right? I mean, because the wild card spots are coming from the East. They really are. I mean, the Angels aren't good enough to win a wild card. I don't think the Twins can hold on. I think the Royals are going to become sellers. I don't think the Tigers can do it. It's going to be New York, Boston, Tampa, those teams primarily is my guess. All right, and Tampa, we just saw them leave town. They can absolutely rake. So that's my guess. I don't think you're going wild card. I think you got to win the division. Here's another troubling statistic. Detroit is still in the red in run differential. There's only two teams, believe it or not, in run differential in the Central. It's the team at the top, Cleveland, and the team at the bottom, Chicago. You look at all the other teams. I mean, look at what Houston's done. They're 109. The Yankees are 108. And the Yankees, as of after Monday night, had lost six in a row, and yet they're still 108-plus in the run-scoring differential. So I don't know what it looks like for each individual fan to say, I've given up. I want this team to sell. But I can tell you this. You come back from Seattle. And where is it? San Diego, right? It's a four-gamer in Seattle. It's a three-gamer in San Diego. You come back and you're six, seven games out. I think this team is making the call pretty easily for not just fans, but for Al Avila, David Chad, and the rest of the front office. You got to sell. And the reason I think you got to sell is because you're not good enough to get that second wild card. You're not good enough or deep enough to beat Cleveland for the division. And you're not going to have a better opportunity to take advantage of the assets that you have. J.D. Martinez is not coming back to this team next year. I don't know about Justin Upton if he's opting out. Justin Wilson could bring you a lot in value. Alex Wilson can bring you a lot in value. I think Alex Avila would be a welcomed left-handed stick off somebody's bench for a postseason push. And I still believe this. I don't know how many teams would be doing it, but Ian Kinsler would provide some major protection as well. And we haven't even touched on the starting staff. If somebody wants to come and poach a Verlander, a Zimmerman, because he may be somebody of that ilk, other than Michael Fulmer or Daniel Norris, I would say let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to us because we can easily picture J.D. Martinez fitting into a team with playoff aspirations. We can easily picture Justin Wilson being a nice piece for them out of the bullpen. It's hard for us to picture, okay, what kind of team needs maybe a second catcher or a DH first baseman with a left-handed power bat.
Right.
That's a little more specific of a niche, but Alex Avila does fit that. And if somebody does want to take the Verlander contract or something like that, I mean, and that's what I mean about tough for us to imagine. It's almost inconceivable for Tigers fans to construct in their mind some sort of trade scenario where that could actually be feasible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the particulars of enough teams in the MLB to tell you, yeah, here's the team with the assets that is actually interested in contending quickly or bringing in a big name to sell some tickets. It's difficult to say, but what is certain is that the Tigers have a lot of pieces that will be available. And even if they go with the bare minimum and trade J.D. Martinez, Justin Wilson, and Alex Wilson, and Alex Avila, I would consider him into the bare minimum. Those are all four pretty attractive pieces for somebody, and that's going to really put a spur in the side of the rebuild, I think.
Well, I agree with you. Look, if I said to you, Matt Wieters is a left-handed stick for Washington. He's their starting catcher, and he's batting 255. So he's not necessarily somebody that Washington would covet, but I don't think it would take a lot to get a guy like Alex Avila. I mean, I think Detroit would be able to get some type of minor league, a nice minor league prospect. But I do believe that certain teams are probably already set in that regard. I mean, you look at what some of these teams, it depends on how they feel about themselves, right? How do people in let's take Milwaukee, for example. How do people in Milwaukee feel about the Brewers' chances? Do they go for broke, or what do they do about you know, their situation at the catching position, okay? Because right now they've got, what's that kid, Bandy, Jet Bandy? He's batting .213. You don't think Milwaukee could use a guy like Alex Avila right now? I think they could. I think that would be a really good pickup for them. But how do people feel in Milwaukee about their chances of winning that Central Division? The Cubs are only a buck and a half back. Milwaukee's about four games under .500. Do they truly feel like they can make a push? We get so wrapped up in the American League and watching the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Rays and the Tribe and the Astros to a certain extent. We don't even pay attention enough to the National League and their needs and who might want somebody from our team and what they could do.
And I think part of that is because the Tigers are built, obviously it's an AL team, they're built like an AL roster. They have slow plotting base runners. We've complained about this before. They make full use of the DH.
Yeah.
And that's why I think Alex Avila might be a better fit in the American League. But you're right, we do underserve the National League and their needs in general, I think just because of awareness. I think Boston might not be a terrible fit for Alex Avila. Christian Vasquez has done a good job behind the plate for them, but he's hitting .295, but he's a right-handed stick.
Mm-hmm.
He's only 26 years old. Avila, you know, they've missed a little bit of the pop in their lineup without Ortiz, without Napoli, who's underperforming in Texas. Avila might not be a bad fit in Boston.
Let me ask you this. I know he came from this team, but J.D. Martinez to Houston would give them an outfield of Springer, Reddick, and Martinez. I guess Mariznick is in there too. Carlos Beltran is more of a DH, right? Aoki is about a .250/.260 hitter. What would JD Martinez look like going back to the team that let him go to Detroit in the first place, the Houston Astros? That's the team, I think, and it's easy for me to say this because, you know, I look at them and I think they're a team that is making a strong push. But I would guess in Houston, they feel like there's a real clear window of opportunity here. We might be the best team in baseball. We might be this year's version of the Chicago Cubs without the 100-plus year dismal history. The Houston Astros, if they wanted to throw all their chips in, go for it, they could do that. Now, personally, I think they could use another starter, more so than a guy like J.D. Martinez. But Houston has the minor league prospects, and they have the window of we can win it all now philosophy, where it's all right. We're young enough. Correa's young enough. Bregman's young enough.
Right.
Altuve's
that's
young
the
enough.
Question. That's the question. Who are the guys that make that window open right now for Houston?
Because
if it's Correa, Altuve, Alex Bregman, who's the rookie third baseman, who's done well for them.
Awesome.
Lance McCullers.
Right.
Maybe Mike Fiers, and I guess you could throw one more starter in there
Dallas,
with Colin McHugh. Keuchel's been really good, but he was good last year, too.
Yeah.
So say you got four or five guys. If those guys are all going to be there next year, don't mortgage your future. Don't shorten your window to go get it now, is my point. And this is an interesting comparison because it came out the other day that Paul George is going to opt out of his contract and go to the Lakers, or
right.
He prefers the Lakers in free agency in 2018. Yeah,
wants to go back home, right.
In the NBA. So teams want the Lakers to go out and trade for him right now. That's the silliest thing you could do. You've already sucked for a couple of years. Enjoy the misery a couple of years longer and hang on to your assets who are going to be of benefit to Paul George once he gets here.
Well, I think
Houston, that's all I'm saying is don't shorten your window. If you think you can win between now and 2019, don't cut that window down by a year or two, more, you know, getting rid of a couple of important prospects who may be part of that winning team in the future in order to secure what you think is needed to do now.
Well, there's a couple of thoughts. Look, Paul George, your example of Paul George is a good one, but Paul George could easily there's a belief that Cleveland and the Clippers want to go after him. So if the Cleveland
for this year,
what if he happens to like what he gets in Cleveland?
You're right.
What if he gets with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and says, you know what, we just won a championship. I want to stay here. What if he goes out to the Clippers and instead of playing for the Lakers, he's still back home? What if he plays for the Clippers and Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan convince him, you know what, we got a chance for another run?
They just hired Jerry West.
Okay, yeah. So that's number one. Number two, the Houston Astros. It's great that you think, oh, this could be the building block of our future, but sometimes that window closes abruptly. You're only an injury from Dallas Keuchel away from being a team that is.
But that's my point.
Borderline,
right now,
or the Angels with a healthy Mike Trout from being back
no,
into
but
this.
That's my point. I don't know that that's the case. I think Anaheim's a lot further back than a healthy Mike Trout from
Houston. Yeah, you're probably
right.
I get
what you're saying.
But I'm saying the combination of a Dallas Keuchel being lost or a Jose Altuve being lost or a Carlos Correa being lost, suddenly your window isn't as open as you thought. Then your starters become another year older. I don't know what their free agency situation is in the future.
That's my point, is that Lance McCullers is on the 10-day DL right now. Dallas Keuchel's on the short-term DL. And Colin McHugh's on the 60-day DL. Those are their three top starters. They're still doing what they're doing. I know they're not as hot as they've been, but they're still doing what they're doing. So who on that roster won't be there, won't be able to contribute at the same level maybe in like 2 years? Carlos Beltran, if you think that's the difference between you and a World Series, then maybe you need to push for it right now. But my point is, and I'm not saying that Houston shouldn't add at the deadline. They should, absolutely. I'm saying don't get rid of guys.
I'm not talking about the Major League roster. If I'm Houston, I'm looking at this opportunity and saying, you know what, we are clearly the best team in the American League.
Sure.
We might be clearly the best team in baseball. If we could add a guy like J.D. Martinez for two prospects who aren't playing with us right now, and they've got a very deep farm system that aren't playing with us right now, they're not the reason we're close to 50 wins right now, then why not make that move, go for it this year, satisfy our fan base, and take advantage of what we have to offer? That's all I'm saying.
No, I agree. It's a fine line between what you're mortgaging in the future. And I think Houston should go for it. They should add. I agree. Mm-hmm. It just depends on how much of your future you're willing to mortgage in order to go get that guy. And is that guy that much of a difference for you?
Who do you think are the guys that are most appealing for the Tigers? Because let's remind everybody this. J.D. Martinez is the first name that comes to everybody's mind and the first name that is always mentioned. I did it too. I also have to remind people that other general managers recognize this too. GMs are looking at the Tigers and going, he is not going to re-sign there. So they're not going to give up a boatload knowing Detroit will not be re-signing
him.
The only reason they might be willing to go more than what they originally were thinking in return to the Tigers is because they're afraid somebody else is going to get
it. You got to get two teams in a bidding war. And that's why my question for you is it too early to slap that seller's tag on the Tigers? Now, we've talked a little bit about the standings and the division race, where things are at in the American League. And part of the problem, I think we can both agree, and most MLB writers are kind of agreeing with this as well. Ken Rosenthal wrote a good article earlier today that was a little bit on the sarcastic side. Kind of talking about how many teams are still in contention in the AL. So God forbid anybody give up, because you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, about a dozen teams in the wild card hunt. And by in the hunt, I mean within four and a half games.
Yeah, but who's good enough to win it?
Okay, that's my point is nobody in the AL has mailed it in yet. Nobody's started the selling process. Now, I know it's June 20th, but the Tigers will be facing Cleveland in that series that we acknowledged earlier about a week and a half from now. I think the fate is going to be pretty clear at that point.
So you don't think it's this road trip? You think when they face Cleveland, that's when your final decision, that's when you come to the conclusion. You haven't come to any conclusions
That's a pretty arbitrary cutoff date. I'm just saying
you got to have a date.
That's what I'm saying. When does the selling process start? Is it too early for the Tigers to start the process? All I'm saying.
I said it's back from this road trip.
So if you want to be a team that's offering J.D. Martinez out there in a way to create an arms race, you got to do it before teams start to fill their needs. So you think when they get back from this road series, when they start playing
at this time next week, it's going to be over. Yeah, I do. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if the same thing was for the Royals. So considering the free agents they have coming up with Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas
and some of those guys.
Yeah, Lorenzo Cain. Those are going to be decisions that Kansas City's pondering as well. Look, at some point, you want to believe in every team you put together. If you're a general manager, if you're a manager of a baseball team, if you're a player on that team, you don't walk through those doors not thinking you can't win. I totally get it. At some point, the cold water has to hit your face. At some point, you have to recognize we haven't been able to string together more than four wins all season long.
Right.
That's ridiculous. You cannot get back into the race unless you push together some type of 8-9-game winning streak, and Detroit doesn't have the capability to do that.
Even Brad Ausmus, who's been almost
defiant,
optimistic to the point of nausea for the rest of us, even he acknowledged the other day, we're not going to win many games playing like this. We're not going to go very far.
He said it was a crappy homestand when they went 2-6.
And he was absolutely right.
Yeah.
You had a word for it.
You had a chance to choke Tampa. You won the first two games. You lose a real tough one with Michael Fulmer on the mound on national TV on Saturday. And then you get your ass kicked on Sunday.
That was completely uninspired.
Uninspired. No energy whatsoever. The beauty of the first two games against the Rays was their energy. Was the fact that you were going first to third and things like that. And then in Seattle, you get Jose Iglesias doing the same thing. It was great, you know. They played perhaps their best defensive game of the entire season, I think, in the season opener, in the series opener against Tampa. After that, it was one massive letdown. It's almost as if, it's too hard. I can't sustain this. And I don't want to label them, you know, that type of team, but that's how it feels. Ken Rosenthal, you mentioned, he wrote a really good article where Detroit is first in blown saves with 13. They're ranked 23rd in the majors in ERA at 4.76. Here's what you have to ask yourself if you're Al Avila. Who do I have who's going to fix those numbers? There's nobody who can fix the numbers. They don't have anybody. It's not like Joe Jimenez is getting healthy again and this phenom, and he's destined to be the next Aroldis Chapman, okay?
Right. Those numbers aren't getting turned around.
They're not getting turned around by any one individual.
You have to create a cutoff point and say, since X, since June 20th, the Tigers have done whatever. Because they are too deep into the season to right that ship at any point.
So give me the guys people truly believe can help turn this thing around. Is it Miguel Cabrera, who's been on a recent tear and it hasn't worked? Is it going to be Justin Upton, who has helped really carry this team until Cabrera got healthy? Has it been J.D. Martinez, who when he came back was one of the hottest hitters? He got the second best OPS of anybody in baseball since he's been back. Where is it? Jose Iglesias has been their best hitter in the month of June, for crying out loud.
How about 8 defensive runs saved so far this season for Jose Iglesias? Third among all shortstops. That's been fantastic.
I just don't see it. And then when you look at the pitching, we've complained about the bullpen all we want, and that's fine. But guess what? People need to look at the starting rotation, too.
They've been unacceptably dreadful.
Jordan Zimmermann's been good. His last three outings prior to the game in which he started against Seattle, game two of the four-game series, he's been really, really good. But guess what? Where's that been all season long? Can you trust that moving forward?
And most of last year.
Yeah, and there's a lot of guys you just don't believe in. So you look at what Detroit has to offer. They might have as much to offer as any team in the American League.
I think they could be the best shape to sell of any team in baseball at the deadline.
Baltimore?
If Baltimore sells.
Kansas City? Well, yeah, why wouldn't Baltimore sell?
Well,
I mean,
I don't
for
know.
Crying
I don't
out loud.
I don't
mean,
want to cite it too often. But
you talk about Detroit's rotation. Their rotation is a 5.5 ERA. That's ridiculous. I mean, they're not going anywhere. And it is kind of funny that, you know, Buck Showalter, the greatest manager on the face of the earth, but they're barely above 500 or barely below it, and nobody says a whole lot. They've got Seth Smith, Castillo, their catcher, isn't bad. Wade Miley is a guy that they could get rid of. That wouldn't be bad. But I maybe I'm a little biased here. J.D. Martinez, Alex Avila, Justin Wilson. If I said those three guys, those three guys are as appealing as anybody else outside of maybe Sonny Gray, Ryan Madsen, Jed Lowry. Madsen would
those
be
are all
a real
right?
Yeah, those are all A's. Madsen would be a really, really good bullpen pickup. I've always liked Jed Lowry. I think he's really good. And I think that's probably about it. But I would take Detroit's. I mean, if you threw Alex Wilson in there, I think those four players for Detroit, to your point, might be as appealing as anybody who could be available out there on the market.
Right, so when you say that, you're not saying that those are the three most attractive players. You're saying Oakland has the best supply in contention with the Tigers in terms of being a full team in sell mode. Because there are other individual guys. Maybe Johnny Cueto is going to be available. Maybe Addison Reed. The Giants could be selling. You know, we'll see. There are other individuals who will be intriguing. But in terms of getting a franchise, getting an organizational haul, and being in a sell mode, the Tigers are in as good a shape as anybody.
All right, before we shift gears into the Red Wings, I want to remind you about Northwestern Tech. Heating and cooling employers are desperate for trained technicians right now. They're having to turn down work because they can't meet the growing demand. So the individuals that are entering the HVAC field are seeing their pay potential go skyrocketing. And they're able to choose the company that's going to help them grow their career. But to get into the field, you have to be trained, but you want to be trained right. So that's why I'm telling you about Northwestern Tech in Southfield. At Northwestern Tech, HVAC is all they teach. So they've perfected their hands-on program over the last 38 years. You know what's ideal about this? They've got flexible scheduling. They know you got to work and keep your job while you're training, so they have those flexible scheduling hours. So I want you to try this. Call some of the big HVAC companies in the area. Ask them where you should go. Dare them. I'll tell you right now, it's going to be unanimous. Northwestern Tech. It's the HVAC school to get trained, certified, and into the field in only 10 and a half months. That's all it's going to take you. And you can go to their website, northwesterntech.edu, or you can call them 248-358-4006, and you can schedule a tour. Make sure you feel comfortable. They know you will. Northwestern Tech, the HVAC school that works, 248-358-4006. Let's dive into the Red Wings, because the Red Wings made some serious headlines throughout the National Hockey League with the protection of certain players. Now, by tonight, on Wednesday night, we're going to know who the Las Vegas Knights are going to choose from each team. We're going to know who they choose from the Detroit Red Wings. And if you look at it, there are some big names out there, names that are available for them that are pretty appealing. James Neal is appealing. Marc-Andre Fleury might be appealing, right? You look at Eric Staal. Eric Staal's a 9-time 20-goal scorer. He's appealing. Dustin Brown's an attractive player.
Some young players, too. Players you can build on.
Right.
Jonathan Marchessault in Florida is somebody that I like a lot. Matthew Dumba coming over from Minnesota is somebody they initially had high hopes for. There are building blocks there, not just old veterans.
No question. And I brought up a lot of veterans. Peter Mrazek, many people feel, is one of those young building blocks. He's only 24, 25 years old. This is a guy that is appealing to a lot of people, especially people here in Detroit. So the Red Wings, you and I talked about this last week, and we said who we would protect and who we would leave exposed. The Red Wings chose to protect Jimmy Howard over Peter Mrazek. The Red Wings chose to protect Mike Green, Danny DeKeyser, and Nick Jensen. All four,
We were 3-for-3 on those defensemen.
Yeah, we were 3-for-3.
And 4-for-4, really.
4-for-4 overall. From a forward standpoint, Anthony Mantha, we were right on that. They protected Franz Nielsen. They had to. We were obviously right on that. Henrik Zetterberg, we were right. Justin Abdelkader, we were right. Thomas Tatar, we were right. I was wrong on Gus Nyquist. Andreas Athanasiou, we were correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wrong on Gus Nyquist because I chose to protect Thomas Nosek instead of Nyquist. I forget who your forwards were, but I was pretty close.
That list is pretty much the one that I put out there, but we had entertained the possibility of somebody like a Riley Sheahan being included in that mix. And basically, we had both agreed you chose Thomas Nosek to take Gus Nyquist's place.
Mm-hmm.
We both agreed that Tatar and Nyquist are too similar players to keep them both in the same role. And then we kind of collectively decided that we'd rather have Tatar than Nyquist simply because he's a multi-time 20-goal scorer, in my opinion, at least. My preference for keeping somebody over Gus Nyquist, I was kind of playing the devil's advocate with Riley Sheahan, but we had talked about the possibilities between Riley Sheahan, Thomas Nosek, and maybe a couple others. So to me, this list is unsurprising, is the word I would use.
Right.
It's kind of what a lot of us saw coming. And I really don't understand.
I wouldn't say that. I would say it's what many of us who believe, you know, that we like to think we know. Look, everybody's opinion is their own, and that's fine. I respect everybody's opinion. But, I mean, if you follow hockey long enough, if you understand the situation, I don't know why people are so surprised about Peter Mrazek and Jimmy Howard.
He played 50 games last year. He had a .901 save percentage. You don't have a .901 save percentage in half a season and even walk into a backup role the next year.
Why do people
think he's incapable of shouldering the load of a full season at this point in his career? I know he's only 25. I know he might prove us wrong in the future. I don't really care all that much. Give me the guy who's had the .920 plus save percentage the last 2 years when he's been healthy.
Well, not only that, he's going to be a free agent after this year.
Right.
Okay? And he's probably going to demand more than $4 million that he makes right now.
Right. So what happens if you leave Jimmy Howard unprotected? Say Vegas takes him or doesn't. He's gone after this year as well. Then you got to extend Mrazek next year on money that is for an unproven guy? I mean, unless he plays 65 games for you this year and has a .930 save percentage and gets you 20 wins, I don't really understand it. I don't see that coming from him.
I would also remind you this. He's not a good teammate, all right? I mean, he's done some things that went noticed in that locker room and were not appreciated. And he's done some things. Like, one time he found out that he wasn't going to start a game, and he skated off the ice during the morning skate because Jared Coro was going to start that night. I mean, that's a problem. He has not been very professional, let's put it that way. I can get into some stories if I wanted to, but I just don't think that's necessarily fair to do that to a guy like Peter Mrazek. But I think it tells you something on how the Red Wings feel. And I got news for people. You're Las Vegas out there. You may not be taking him anyway as a goalie.
Well, I think they're more likely to take him as a trade piece. But I don't understand the logic of people that assume that, oh, Vegas is going to take Mrazek, because they're not locked by position, right? They could take four goalies
sure,
if they wanted.
Sure, they can take whoever they want, right.
So, and there are other good guys available out there that people think could be used in the same fashion. So if you assume that Vegas is going to take Marc-Andre Fleury as its starter, then Peter Mrazek is a good backup option, especially at the price that he's at right now.
Yeah, that's
if
true.
If Vegas decides that they can – if they want to hold him for a year and then trade him, that makes more sense to me, because the people that think they can get him and flip him right away, sure, if you're willing to take the really low price that the Red Wings aren't willing to take, because the Red Wings want to get something for Peter Mrazek if they're going to have to trade him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if Vegas takes him and wants to trade him, you're looking at a minimal return, but it's a free return for Vegas. For the Red Wings – they weren't able to find a suitable trade partner, so they'd rather lose this guy for nothing than to trade him for very, very low value, or was there just no interest in him in the first place? And that's what I don't really understand about the people that think it's automatic that Vegas can take him and flip him for something of high value right away.
I don't see what – do you think we get too wrapped up in our guys more than anything else? In other words, do we have a greater value for our team, or our player, I should say, than anybody else might have? I mean, think about this for a minute. 17 times last year in 50 games, Peter Mrazek allowed 4 goals or more. That's a lot of goals.
That's bad, and I do want to point out how bad the Red Wings defense has been. So it's not all on him, but 17 times.
Yeah, that's Jimmy Howard didn't do that. He went 18-21-90. He had a save percentage of 90 and a goals against of 304, all right? I want people to think about this for a second. I mean, his career save percentage is 91. There's nothing special about that.
And he played internationally for the Czech Republic, and he wasn't special for them either, right? I mean, Jimmy Howard was part of that Team USA team, and he was good in that tournament.
Yeah, you're never going to here's what's happened.
My only point was that it's not maybe entirely based on the Red Wings' defensive core that he gave up those bad numbers.
Fair enough. I think what's happened in this town, Tell me if you think I'm wrong here. In this town, we like to fall back into, you know how Philly has that reputation. Oh, they even threw snowballs at Santa, right? L.A., they really don't care. We have a reputation that we almost feel like we're obligated to live up to. And that is the two hardest jobs in this city are the quarterback of the Lions and the goaltender of the Red Wings. And we just want the backup for both positions in either sport. And Peter Mrazek is the backup. And that's what we're doing. People are gravitating toward, this is low-end fruit, man. People are gravitating toward the guy that they feel is younger, even though he's only a fifth-round draft pick, and the guy who they feel is the long-term solution. When deep down inside, if they looked at the numbers, if they truly believed in what they see, if they remember watching him, they would recognize, you know what? He's just a guy. What are they using as the backbone for their argument on why he is so important, do you think? Do they see?
I think they point to Jimmy Howard's injury history, and they see Mrazek as a young and for the next, 365 days affordable guy. And they saw how good he was when he was on top of his game, because he was a 920, 930 save percentage guy, maybe even higher for stretches. He had the low goals against. He reminds them of Hašek a little bit because he's got this wild style of play.
Why? Because he's from the Czech Republic?
No, because he flails around on the ice and he's undersized. Jimmy Howard's a very traditional butterfly goalie. He goes down quickly. He's a traditional North American style goalie. Mrazek has a little bit of pizzazz to his style.
What's more, when you look at goaltenders, I want your opinion on this, because I've talked to Chris Osgood, Darren Elliott about this before. What's the most important thing? Save percentage, goals against?
I don't know. I don't know that either number is. I guess by the eye test, I like to see what position they're in when they're making these saves, or how's their rebound control.
Yeah.
Are they communicating well with their defense? Yep. Things like that.
Yeah.
So save percentage is probably the more indicative number.
Right.
But you and I talk about this all the time. It's about chances, not shots.
Okay. Well, fair to say he's been a regular for 3 years, all right? He's had a save percentage of 918, 921, and 901. I mean, that, in other words...
relatively pedestrian.
Right. And you want to be, just so people know, from the people I've talked to, goalie coaches and goalies and ex-goalies, anything above 9-2 is good, all right? That's what you, in a perfect world, as a goaltender, not in a perfect world, but as a goaltender, what you would like is you would like to be somewhere in the neighborhood of a save percentage of 92, all right? So last year, for example, the best goalie in the National Hockey League was Sergei Bobrovsky. He had a 9.32 save percentage, 9.32. He had goals against the 2.06, but his save percentage was pretty damn good.
Well, those numbers are both excellent, but Columbus plays under John Tortorella and plays a very tight defensive system. They're a defense-first team.
So Peter Mrazek had the third worst save percentage in the NHL. He had the third worst goals against average, I believe, in the NHL. And we're sitting here touting him like he's the next, you know, Terry Sawchuk. And he's not. It's a problem. And people are just falling in love or falling out of love, let's put it that way, with Jimmy Howard, I believe. I think that's been the bottom line. Anybody else in your mind that gives you reason for pause on why Detroit, and by the way, there are other goalies. Would you take Marc-Andre Fleury over Peter Mrazek if you were the Las Vegas Knights? I don't
know. To start, yes.
But he had a better save percentage, and he had better goals against average, and he had a better wins, more wins.
He was hurt for a stretch. Matt Murray's a fantastic goalie, but took the job back from him. There's no denying that.
I think Pittsburgh doesn't win the cup without him, though.
No, you're right, but I think Marc-Andre Fleury is your starter, and if you're a Vegas team that wants Mrazek, then you take Mrazek as the backup.
Okay.
You give him 30 games to play, and if he does well, his value's higher, and you trade him a la Cam Talbot, a la Thomas Kreider, people like that.
Right.
And I just want to point out, you're not incorrect in pointing out that threshold of a 920 save percentage is where you want to be near. If that's the threshold, Mrazek was near that his first 2 years, 918 and 921. On top of that, there's a dozen goalies in the league last year that had a save percentage of 920 or above, okay? Actually, this might be postseason numbers. Excuse me.
So if that's the case,
postseason numbers.
Yeah. So if that's
accurate.
So even if that's the case, and I don't believe that to be the case. The bottom line is that this is a situation. As a matter of fact, there might be even fewer than that. But the bottom line is that's the threshold. That's the bottom line. Okay. That's what you have to be. There are about 13 goalies. Of 920, Cam Talbot, as you mentioned before, the Edmonton goalie, right around 92 as well. Freddie Anderson was slightly below, but I'd take him over Peter Mrazek.
But
I guess the bottom line is there are plenty of goalies out there that are a hell of a lot better than him, and I do believe that if you're the Las Vegas Knights, who are you taking from that Red Wings unprotected list?
Yeah, that's the ultimate question. To me, if I'm Vegas, I take probably either a low-end forward that I can put on the third or fourth line, or like a Helm or a Glendening or a Sheahan, or I'm going to take a young defenseman.
Yeah, I'm probably going to take – yeah, I'm thinking this. It's one of three guys. Peter Mrazek, okay, I'll throw that in there because I think he would be your backup. Second would be Riley Sheahan. These are not in order, by the way, because Riley Sheahan is a big forward – who's going to make $2 million, that's it, and that's not very expensive, and you'll have an opportunity to rid yourself of him the following year if you want. And lastly, it might be Xavier Ouellette. Xavier Ouellette is, I think, a skilled defenseman. However, he's also a third-pairing defenseman. He would probably be your number six. But you're not going to be able to have a bunch of ones. So that's kind of where I think the Las Vegas is headed with, you know, with this new hockey order is headed with some of the Red Wings. I think people are so wrapped up, and look, nationally the same thing was kind of revealed too. But people are so wrapped up in Mrazek or Howard when I don't think it was really much of a choice, to be honest with you. I'm taking Jimmy. I would like Jimmy Howard to be in better shape. One, he's a little bit older. Yes, he's 8 years older, I believe. And he makes a little bit more money. Who's the better goaltender? I think Jimmy Howard.
That's my point. It's not been that close.
Yeah.
And I think we're kind of failing to acknowledge this larger fact. A lot of Red Wings fans see the next couple years and say, if saving X amount of money and keeping a younger guy under our protection – now, fairness to the situation, we don't know what Mrazek's contract demands are going to be like next year, and I don't think he does either because he wouldn't want to negotiate that deal right now. He'd want another year's worth of play in his arsenal, so to speak. But I think what we're failing to acknowledge is a lot of Red Wings fans, you and I are looking at this as Jimmy Howard gives us a better chance to win. And by win, we don't mean a Stanley Cup next year. We just mean be competitive. That's something we want. We forget, I think, how many Red Wings fans are saying tank, tear it all down. I don't care how many games we lose next year. And from that perspective, maybe that's part of the reason why they want Mrazek.
Yeah, could be. Maybe they feel like it's time to start anew. Let's go with the younger player. So they're looking at age. They're not looking at production or even capability right now. Let's look at the younger player and just let's start building with all these young players who are in their 20s. They would like to get rid of guys like Zetterberg. They'd like to get rid of Justin Abdelkader. I talked with somebody the other day and they said, you know what? I just want to get rid of all the bad contracts. Well, I don't think that's possible. I don't think no one's going to go out there and take Darren Helm and Justin Abdelkader and Jonathan Erickson. I don't like the contracts either, but it's just not realistic to be able to get rid of all of them. You shouldn't have signed them to those terms of deals in the first place, granted, but you're stuck with some of them. So what should be the plan moving forward? The plan moving forward should be to try and get guys like Tyler Bertuzzi and Thomas Noshek on this team, filtering in a little bit, see where this team goes, and then have the possibility of making some trades at the trade deadline if it's possible. Those two guys are going to be on this team next year. They're going to be Bertuzzi's going to be a third line guy. Noshik's going to be a fourth line guy if he's not taken. And you're going to have some different looks. But for the most part, I mean, it's going to be really difficult to get rid of as many of the players fans want to see gone as possible. It's just I just don't see how they can do
it. Right, and let's not be silly enough to assume that all those opinions of fans are rational or that all those opinions should be pursued. And I know that's not what you're saying, but you do have to appease the fan base to a certain extent. And I don't think next year's Red Wings are going to be the type of Red Wings that fans really want to see, because Ken Holland has already stated his commitment to trying to get the fans to see playoff game in Little Caesars Arena year one. And that's what he's going to go for.
I know. Well, let me ask you this. If you were the general manager and you're in the last year of your contract.
Yeah, you don't walk out and say, okay, I don't think we have any shot next year. We're in this deep rebuild. By the way, can you please extend me?
Right.
Good luck.
Here's what you think.
To a new owner?
You think I had guys like Dylan Larkin and Danny DeKeyser have worst years of their careers. I need more help for Henrik Zetterberg. I sure as hell wouldn't go get a guy like Thomas Vanek and things like that. But I would make sure that roster is as open
really
as possible.
Here's why I don't really mind the Vanek signing. You're able to flip that later in the year if you're out
no,
of
No, I'm talking about
contention.
I wouldn't go do that this year is what I'm saying, because there was a belief that that was something that they wanted to do. They wanted to bring him back.
I guess it depends on who you think is going to make that roster out of camp, if everyone's healthy and things like that. I'm not as hell-bent against not re-signing him as other people. Again, you can use I think this is a valuable asset that teams don't always do a great job, specifically the Red Wings don't always do a great job of doing. Sign these veterans on short-term deals, on two-year deals, and flip them at the deadline if you're not in contention. And I know you don't necessarily look in June or July with that outlook. Yeah. Okay, if 8 months from now we're out of it, I can sell this guy. But that is almost like an insurance policy. Now, if you feel that Thomas Vanek's going to do no good in your top six during the course of the year, or that Bertuzzi is ready for that opportunity, or Noshik is, then fine, don't re-sign him and give those guys a chance.
Well, is he holding anybody back? That's the thing. And that's what fans are wrapped up in. Too many of these young guys are being held back by some of these old guys. And the reality is, some of these young guys, they're just not good enough. I hate to put it that way, but it's true. They're not top six forwards. I never said Bertuzzi was going to be a top six guy. I said he was going to be a third line guy. So there's a difference there. So their top six guys probably remain pretty much intact, don't you think?
Yeah,
it's going to be Zetterberg.
So.
It's going to be Abdelkader. It's going to be Larkin. It's going to be Athanasiou. It's going to be Nielsen. Right? There might be one opening there.
Yeah.
It's going to be Tatar. It's going to be Mantha. It's going to be something like that.
Therein lies, that does is only put into greater focus how bad some of those deals are. Because those aren't the guys you're overpaying. It's Helm you're overpaying. It's Abdelkader you're overpaying. It's Erickson you're overpaying. I mean, that's rough. That is rough. There's no escape out of that.
If I said to you, Jacob Trouba was available, or Cam Fowler was available. I don't think Fowler would be, but let's say Trouba was available. You had to give up Dylan Larkin or Andreas Athanasiou for Jacob Trouba? Would you do it?
Straight up, it's tough because I think you have so few building blocks here in Detroit that it's like you're almost like you're trading one building block for another. And if a defensive building block's that much better to build off of, then great. But in another sense, it's almost like Andrew Luck being traded for, I don't know, another franchise quarterback, Russell Wilson straight up or something like that, because it'd be like the two franchises acknowledging, okay, these guys need a fresh start, or we just got to try something different. And
well, Winnipeg doesn't have a whole lot of room for Trouba. I mean, I think he's a really good player. I think here,
I think he's find room for him. I don't know that there's a wealth of defensemen in Winnipeg to the point where they can't afford to hang on to or keep a roster spot for him or anything
well,
like that.
Eventually,
it's not like they're in danger of sending him down to the A.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. They have the need for scoring. Detroit does, too. Detroit has the need for a top-pair defenseman, a number one. Trouba can be legitimately a one, no worse than a two.
Sure.
Okay. So you would have, but you always have to give up something to get something. I think it's gotten to the point, for me anyway, that I think Andreas Athanasiou has become almost more valuable than Dylan Larkin. And I think if you could,
I don't think most NHL GMs feel that way, but I think last year Andreas Athanasiou was a more effective scorer than Dylan Larkin, and I'm not willing to say a whole lot more than that.
Why do you think Dylan Larkin's stock remains high?
The ability to play center, and I think he's a far better two-way player. Okay. I don't think he's a physically dominant player by any stretch, but his defensive zone effort to me is better than Athanasiou's,
mm-hmm.
and he might not play center every night for the Red Wings this year or next year, or this past year or next year, but he has the ability to play center. He's played it most of his life. And look at the Cup. We talked about it before.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be strong down the middle.
Think about what Pittsburgh – the reason Pittsburgh wins that Cup is because their centers, Sidney Crosby, Matt Cullen, Nick Bonino, Jake Guentzel, Evgeny Malkin, those are their centers.
Well, Guentzel played the wing. Bonino was hurt for a stretch,
right.
But Malkin was fantastic. Crosby was excellent. Matt Cullen was very good. His whole line was very good for stretches.
Yeah. I don't remember.
The bigger point is there's a matchup difference there with Nashville. Sidney Crosby, I like Mike Fisher a lot. He's a really good captain. Sidney Crosby and Mike Fisher don't necessarily belong matched up against each other that way. Evgeny Malkin, and I'm not even sure who the second line center would have been if Cal Yarncroc, or he was playing right wing, I guess. I mean, Nashville's best players were on the outside. James Neal, Philip Forsberg, and Ryan Johansson is who I'm forgetting.
Well, Philip Forsberg's a center, isn't he?
You're right.
I think the centers for Nashville are Mike Fisher, Philip Forsberg, Kelly Yarncroc, and Colton Sissons.
Okay. Sissons was good for a stretch as well, but my point is I think there's a strength of a hockey team is built on the middle, and that's your defenseman, your goaltending, your centers, and you find some skill players on the outside, and Red Wings have a lot of the flashy skill players, kind of like the Tigers used to have corner outfielders who could hit 280 and 20 home runs but only do it for 1 year.
You've said the same thing for a long time. So here, Detroit centers typically are supposed to be, anyway. You got Larkin, right? You got Nielsen. You've got Athanasiou was moved to the wing.
Helman Sheahan,
right?
Because that's who you're paying,
right?
Literally in the last two summers, Larkin is obviously on his rookie deal. Those last three centers have been signed either to big extensions or brought in from free agency. Mm. When you signed the deal to Helm last year, 5 years, 19.25 or whatever it was, or 4 years, 19.25. You committed to those four guys being your four centers. That's why it was crazy at the time. You're locked in your four lines down the middle. That's insane for the next 4 or 5 years.
You know what I heard somebody say the other day? They said they were upset because they think the Red Wings next year, part of the roster should include they left out Noshek, but they had talked about Svechnikov and Martin Furk. And I'm thinking, hold on a second. Martin Furk? I mean, he was released, picked up by Carolina, then released again. What is it that people feel like, hey, that's awesome. You know, we got to have a guy like Martin Furk. What's he done that makes you?
These are guys that our fans are not seeing on an everyday basis. If this is a groundswell from Grand Rapids, then I apologize. But my perception is that most of these people aren't watching Thomas Noshek on a nightly basis in Grand Rapids before they had won the Calder Cup. Most of these people hadn't seen him play outside of maybe a couple of YouTube clips when the Red Wings drafted him.
Right.
So they're this. To be frank, they're the same idiots that I'm not going to listen to when they talk about not wanting to extend Stafford, or that are upset that Peter Mrazek was exposed, or any of these other things. Get a clue.